This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Hey, thanks for joining me on the show today. You're going to get to meet Sean Chaney. Sean is the Vice President of Marketing and Business Development on the client side. He works at AccuQuote.com, which is an insurance company. And he's very involved in lead generation and online marketing. And we're going to talk about some pretty interesting things with regard to that, including on today's show, multivariate testing, criminology, cold calling and the art of doing it right, sushi, and the ultimate gift.
When we went into our 2008 planning about this time last year, we said, how can we increase our response rate at the highest ends of the funnel? When people land on our website, we need to make sure we're turning the highest percentage of those people into customers, which means the number of combinations there are, the number of possibilities, the number of possible recipes we could end up with are in the thousands or tens of thousands. It's absolutely mind-boggling, and I'm very thankful that we have the technology using Optimos behind us to do all the heavy lifting for us. And I asked the question, I said, how many of you know what happens to a lead after you generate that lead? And there was only one hand that went up in the room. And that absolutely blew my mind because not all leads are created equal. You're there for a business event. You want to make sure that you leave that event, especially if you're taking time away from the office and taking time away from your family. You want to make sure that when you're there, you're maximizing it and you can walk away. And when you walk away, you said, you know what? This was productive. And not only was it productive, but I had a good time.
Welcome, Sean.
Hi, how you doing?
I am great. Are you calling me from the Chicago area today?
I sure am. Yeah. In nice, balmy, and raining Wheeling, Illinois.
Oh, no. Is it raining there? I'm sorry to hear that. Well, there's nothing
actually,
better.
That's a good thing. I'm happy that it's raining. My lawn can use it.
Oh, yeah. I know. We've had to crank up the sprinklers lately out here in California. So you and I met through AdTech and iMedia. You're on the advisory board of iMedia, and you've been at AccuQuote now for how long?
I've been at AccuQuote coming up on 6 years.
It'll
be 6 years in November.
That's good. So you've had a long enough time there to master a few things, which we're going to talk about, some of the work that you're doing at AccuQuote. And as well, you prior to that time, you'd done some business of your own and also done some other marketing work. Tell us about your Leaders Incorporated, where you worked, and it was Bamboo Biz, right?
Exactly. It was actually a complete... I'd say completely lucky that I fell into the area of marketing completely by accident. My background after I got out of college, I was worked my way through college working as a paramedic. But after I graduated college, I went on to law school, moved out here to Chicago for law school, decided that that just wasn't going to be a good fit for me, so I got into business. I started working for a company doing sales at Nightingale Conant, actually. About a year after that, a buddy of mine from college called me and said, hey, you have to meet this guy who runs a company called Leaders Incorporated. He does sales training for teaching people how to sell over the phone. And I said, well, you know, I've sold over the phone, and I've sort of risen to the top in that area over the year that I had been in there. So it just seemed like a good fit. So we were doing a lot of sales training over there and teaching people how to sell over the phone. We were putting on large seminars at big venues across the country, places like the MGM Grand out in Vegas, and it was a lot of fun. But he also had an organization of his own, and they needed leads. So he was doing lead generation on television, and right after one of these conferences, somebody came up to him and said, I can generate leads that are going to be much better quality, and I can do it online, and I can do it at a fraction of the cost than you're doing it on television.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, oh, you've got to be joking. But, hey, give us some of those leads that you're generating, and we'll test them out. And they were the best leads that we had ever worked in our lives. So we looked at it, and we said, hey, this is good. So we got a co-op together, and we basically ordered 10,000 leads, which is how many this guy said he could generate in a month. So the way it went is 45 days later, this person was only able to generate 1,000 of these leads, and he was doing it at a cost where we were actually going in the hole for every lead that was generated.
Mm.
So this person turned to me and he said, "Sean, I need you to figure out how to generate 10,000 leads for me in the next 30 days, or I'm going to be out of business." So it was trial by fire, where I basically went to Barnes & Noble, spent about half a day there reading books and taking notes and figuring out who at the time, and this was back in 98, figuring out who at the time was sort of proclaiming themselves as the guru of online marketing. So what I did is within 72 hours, I had a website built using FrontPage 98, which was the first time I had used that. And we were advertising on GoTo.com, even before it became Overture and now Yahoo. And we were up and running. We were generating leads. They were great quality. We were doing them very cost-effectively, and it sort of took off and evolved from there.
So that online lead generation is a big, big topic for you. And one of the things that you've told me you're doing recently is a lot of work with multivariate testing. So AccuQuote is a company that is an insurance broker. You essentially generate online leads and 800 leads. People get an inbound lead, and then you help them select the right insurance. And the interesting thing that I learned from you about insurance was that insurance costs have come way down, but people are living longer, so actuarially, it's cheaper to insure people in general, and the competitive nature of the always-on web has also driven so much competition that it's a very competitive market. So you're not only getting first-time prospects for insurance, life insurance, et cetera, but also getting a lot of people who are paying way too much money. So you've got a very fruitful business, and I think I'd like you to explain to our listeners some of the infrastructure, the Omniture and the Optimost, and some of the systems that you use and how you're doing your multivariate testing.
Right. And when we looked, you know, because of the fact that everything we're doing, we're looking at the ROI, we're very direct response oriented. Even before I got into online marketing, my whole background, my whole focus was direct response, whether it was television, radio, or direct mail. And for online, it's the same way. Everything has to produce a positive ROI. So we looked, when we went into our 2008 planning about this time last year, we said, how can we increase our response rate at the highest ends of the funnel? Obviously, our creative testing that we do using our ad server, and we use Dart as our ad server, that is at the higher end of the funnel, or anything with the creative messaging in any of our advertising we do. But then we said, when people land on our website, we need to make sure we're turning the highest percentage of those people into customers. So what we did is we looked at a couple of multivariate testing solutions, and we ended up going with Optimost. And we went into this year and we said, you know what? All we need to do is get a 7% better response on the website for this to be a win for us, for it to produce a positive ROI for the money that we're paying for this tool. And we looked at it and we said, all right, first we're going to focus on our homepage. So we're going to do extensive testing on our homepage. And we have two primary websites. We have AccuQuoteLife.com, which we use for all of our online advertising, and then we have AccuQuote.com, where we do all of our drivers from PR, offline advertising, and SEO. And we looked at both of those sites and we said, how can we maximize that? So we focused on the homepage. We started by doing strictly A/B testing. We're running about 6 or 7 different versions all at the same time, and we end up coming up with a concept winner.
Wait a minute. So the A/B testing was actually on AccuQuote Life and AccuQuote.com and various versions of the homepage. That was what you were changing, was essentially what appeared when I landed on your homepage from an ad or PR or whatever?
Exactly.
Okay.
We were doing, and what we did is, depending on what the look and feel was, we translated that look and feel throughout the main funnel on our website as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah.
So we created a consistent experience throughout the entire process. But what we're focused on is how many people versus the people that land on the page, how many of those people turn into leads. And that was our biggest focus there. And the results were amazing. In fact, AccuQuote.com, we ended up through our A/B testing, we must have tested about 6 or 7 versions on that site alone, And we end up getting a 50% lift, 50% lift, of people who landed on the website, so visitors to leads generated through that site. That was phenomenal. The return on investment on that is absolutely through the roof. And already through our A-B testing on AccuQuote Life, we're already almost halfway to our goal of getting to a 20% lift. And I expect to have a 20% lift before the end of the year, not only through our A-B testing, but also through our multivariate testing, which is breaking up the site into, typically we're breaking up our sites into 8 or 9 different pieces, and then testing all the variables within those separate pieces. So we'll test headers, we'll test headlines, we'll test different logos of some of the carriers we represent. We'll test the buttons. We'll test the order of the form. We'll test color schemes, different layouts, all different things there that all the different variables, usually 5 or 6 different variables for each of those 8 or 9 different placements that we're breaking up, which means the number of combinations there are, the number of possibilities, the number of possible recipes we could end up with are in the thousands or tens of thousands. It's absolutely mind-boggling, and I'm very thankful that we have the technology using Optimost behind us to do all the heavy lifting for us.
So for Optimost, what they do is they allow almost like a dynamic page generation that's tracked to see which ones can convert best. Is that how Optimost works?
That's exactly how it works. What we're able to do for each of these elements, I mean, for the A-B testing, it's relatively simple. That's simple in terms of the tracking. But when it comes down to the multivariate testing and you have all these different combinations, it's coming down and it's saying this button, by having this blue button that says compare quotes versus the green button over here that says get a free quote, that's producing a 4.5% lift. Or by removing a Better Business Bureau logo, something that's totally counterintuitive to us, that our lift goes up. By having the Better Business Bureau logo on there, our response goes down by a few percentage points. So it actually isolates the variables and tells you what percentage either lift or decrease you're getting on each independent variable.
Got it. And somebody bought Optimost recently?
Actually, they were purchased by Interwoven,
okay,
which is known primarily for their content management systems.
Yeah.
They were purchased by them, I believe, about a year ago.
Got it. Yeah, that's great. Matt Roach, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, he's the CEO. Okay, good. So that's helpful. And I think you're doing a presentation at the Online Lead Quality Summit coming up. If my listeners wanted to get a copy of the presentation after you present it, would you be willing to share that?
It depends on who it's with.
There's no insurance company listeners can have.
people can reach out to me, and I'm usually very open with a lot of the data. I'm not sharing anything that's you know proprietary, that we have some secret sauce that I'm sharing.
Yep.
Obviously, I wouldn't do that. But at the Online Lead Quality Summit, I'm going to be presenting the fact that really several problems, and this is all revolving around lead scoring, lead segmentation, and lead routing. So the biggest misconception that a lot of marketing departments have and a lot of marketing folks have is that once I generate a lead, I've done all this work, I generated a lead, now it's not my problem. I'm giving it over to sales, and it's their problem now. A couple years ago, I gave a presentation to a room. It was about 100 people in the room. It was about 50-50 of B2B versus B2C folks, all marketing people. And I asked the question, I said, how many of you know what happens to a lead after you generate that lead? And there was only one hand that went up in the room.
Wow.
And that absolutely blew my mind, because not all leads are created equal.
Yeah.
There's different lead types. I know if I get a lead from a PR story that was generated because of a PR story where somebody in the wall, an editor in the Wall Street Journal was writing about life insurance and our CEO, Byron Udell, was quoted, I know that's going to be a much better lead than somebody who came to me, let's say, from seeing one of our banner ads on a casual gaming property like Yahoo Games, for example. And so there's a lot of intricacies that go into the lead generation, and really the name of the game is not just the lead generation, It's making sure that you're able to turn those leads into dollars at the end of the selling cycle.
So before we go to a commercial break, one of the things that you've written about, you write for iMediaConnection.com, and you've penned a lot of really good, helpful articles. And not all of them are specifically about marketing. A lot of them are about being in the world of marketing as a marketer. One of them is that you gave some advice about being a good networker and a mentor and a connector in the industry. Can you, just before we go to commercial break, tell us maybe the top three or four things that we should do if we're in marketing and or in sales, business development, whatever it might be, in the digital media marketing and web business to keep ourselves out in the world? What do you do and what do you recommend?
The biggest thing is whenever you go to any trade show or any business conference or anything where you're where it's a networking environment, make sure you go into it with a plan. There are a lot of different conferences, iMedia is one of them, where they actually publish who's going to be attending ahead of time. So you're able to go through. One of the techniques that I use is I'll take the entire attendee list, export it to Excel, sort it, and I'll color code based on people I already know, based on people I don't know, and then also based on people that I don't know but I really want to meet. And what I'll do is I'll go into it with a plan and say, okay, here are the people I want to meet for this specific purpose. And I will, for anybody whose contact information I can get, I'll reach out to them ahead of time and say, hey, you know, I saw that you're attending this conference. I would love to get some time and sit down with you. I think that we have some things in common with our businesses, or I'd just love to find out about what you're doing. Always go into it with a plan. Some people will go in and say, I want to collect 50 business cards from different people, or I want to walk out of there with a certain amount of insertion orders signed. Whatever the objective is, make sure to go in with a plan. The other thing is, once you're at an event, it doesn't do any good if you're only hanging out with people you already know. Now, relationship building is definitely key, but you need to divide it up a little bit. What I like to do is spend about 50% of my time with the people I already know, and just build those relationships, and the other 50% of the time getting out there and meeting people I don't know. So if you see me at a conference and I'm walking around and I'm looking at people's name badges, I'm looking to see, hey, is there somebody here from a company that sounds interesting? And I'll just walk up to people and start talking to them, which really goes into the other aspect, which is get out there. It doesn't do any good at these networking events to stand in a corner with your drink and just observe, do people watching. You're there for a business event. You want to make sure that you leave that event, especially if you're taking time away from the office and taking time away from your family. You want to make sure that when you're there, you're maximizing it, and you can walk away. And when you walk away, you said, you know what, this was productive. And not only was it productive, but I had a good time. The great thing about our industry, with the interactive advertising industry, is that there are a lot of fun people. I absolutely love going to these events. I mean, my wife's not going to like to hear me saying that, but I absolutely love going to these events and spending time with very interesting people and just finding out about people. Your conversations don't necessarily have to revolve around business. In fact, about 75% of the time, it's just getting to know people. So if you are somebody who's shy, and when I first got into this industry, I was extremely shy, and I had to just kind of muffle up a little bit and force myself to start talking to people. And the more and more I did that, it just became a lot more natural, to the point now where that's my favorite aspect of going to any business event, is participating in networking events, usually in the evening, or just getting out and meeting people.
Well, it strikes me, you've told me that sometimes when you go to these events, you come home and you're just scribbling note after note after note about the things you've learned, the little ideas and tidbits you've picked up. And I agree with you that kind of forcing yourself and having a few outcomes and strategies for what you want to accomplish at any event will allow you to bring home those great ideas. So
the other key is, when you get back from the event, is the follow-up.
Yeah.
There are a couple strategies that I use. I use LinkedIn very heavily.
Me too.
So every single business card, and usually in the evening before I go to bed, I'll jot a little note on the back of the back of all the business cards. So that way, when I get back, I'm able to send out LinkedIn invites to people when I get back, so I have those people in my network. But what I'll also do, using LinkedIn, you can use that generic invite that just, you know, I'd like to add you to my network, or whatever the generic message is. I like to write a personalized message.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of time. I always allocate about half a day when I get back from these conferences, not only to scan in the business cards using CardScan, but also I take the time to get those out through LinkedIn, write those personal invitations. And then for people who I feel like I have a really good relationship with, people who I spend a lot of time with, I'll also send them an invite through Facebook as well.
Exactly. The ones you particularly want to know more on a more personal level. Yeah.
Exactly. That's I think with Facebook, at the very beginning, I wasn't as, I was just, you know, anybody I would just, you know, want to connect with on Facebook. Now I'm very selective.
Aha. Well, we're going to go to a break to thank our sponsors. And when we come back, we want to talk about cold calling, criminology, and sushi. So stay tuned. We'll thank our Dishy Mix sponsors who enable us to have this fun together today. And we'll talk to you when we get back. We're with Sean Chaney, VP of Marketing and Business Development for AccuQuote.com.
Listen to Money, Mission, and Meaning. Passion at work, purpose at play. A weekly audio program bringing you success in the business of life on personallifemedia.com.
We're back. And I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Thanks for staying with us. On the second half of the show, we're going to talk about some fun, more fun things with Sean. So, Sean, I just have this funny little thing I need to ask. I noticed that in reading your bio that your part of your degree was in criminology. What is the business world like? What is the digital media and marketing world like as compared to criminology? Is there any similarity?
Sometimes in the business area, I feel like the background that I had in criminology helps me sniff out and avoid danger in this industry. But it was sort of interesting. I got into, I chose that as a major where I went to school at UC Irvine because when I was a senior in high school, I took a business law class and I loved it. Mm. I absolutely loved the education part of it and figured, hey, that's the route I want to go. I want to be a lawyer. This is just the direction that I want to end up. I didn't really have an idea why. All I knew was that lawyers made a lot of money. And that's pretty much what drove me. Other than that, I really had no idea. But I knew I did like the education aspect.
Well, you're also very analytical, and I think that probably appealed to you in that way. The same reason you like to do things like multivariate testing.
Yeah, and that really tied in with the criminology, with the degree that I had, because the degree, not only was it focused on, and it had classes that were more geared toward people, preparing people for law school, but it also prepared people to go into an area where, like the FBI, for example, where they were analyzing criminal behavior. And that's where the analytical, my analytical aspects really came out and shined.
So another question for you. You have given some advice to the industry, similar to your kind of networking thing. You've also counseled the industry about how to make an effective cold call. Because you originally came from sales and now you're in marketing and everyone calls you and tries to get a piece of your budget. Would you give us not the basic 101 stuff, but the really highly evolved, like if we're already pretty good at making a cold call and we know not to do the basic screw up stuff, what's the highest and best level at which we could work at to make a cold call in today's world?
The key aspect here, and it's tough if you're making just a large volume of calls, but what I can tell you is the people that call me that know a little bit about me, know a little bit about what the type of marketing efforts that we're doing here at AccuQuote, and have done their homework, if they call me and it's very clear within the first 30 seconds that they've done a little bit of homework, it doesn't matter what they're selling, what they're pitching, even if it's something I have absolutely no interest in, I am going to listen.
Okay.
Because they've taken the time, and I know what it's like to be a salesperson and have to make those calls and having that, you know, fear of rejection and going through that. And if somebody has taken the time to do their homework, the likelihood that I'm actually going to buy something from them or engage in a business relationship goes through the roof. That's probably the biggest element that gets somebody 2 minutes into a conversation versus the conversation being over in 30 seconds.
So it really is just doing your homework.
It's doing your homework. And the thing is, you know, you said let's not do the 101, but it's very surprising. Out of 100 cold calls I get, usually only about 5 have actually done their homework.
Got it. Okay. So it is 101 is 201 is 301. Do your homework. Figure it out.
Exactly.
So another thing that I asked you about was the book you most recommend to friends. You're an avid reader. I'm an avid reader. We're always comparing books. And I wanted to make sure that I got that in this segment because I always like your book recommendations. I actually think that you should you should blog about that frequently. You told me that the book that you read every 3 to 4 months, you read it over and over, is a book by Jim Stovall called The Ultimate Gift. I actually haven't read that book. What's the takeaway on that book for us?
The great thing and the premise of this book is it really helps you with your outlook on life and how you deal with different people and deal with different situations. It's funny, I was turned onto this book about 7 or 8 years ago, right after it came out, and actually a year ago it was turned into a movie as well.
Really?
The movie's not even close to as good as the book is.
Never are.
But the book is such an easy read. It's only about, I think, around 120 pages. Very easy. Usually I'm able to get it completely read in a plane flight from Chicago to New York. So it's an easy read. But the premise is sort of the basic plot is there's a very wealthy man, sort of think of a Bill Gates type, somebody who's really built up his fortune, and he's done it in cattle and oil, and then he's sort of expanded his tentacles into other areas. And he's not only was a wealthy man, he was very philanthropy-driven and just a good person. But what he did for his family when he started building a family was he provided everything to them. So they didn't have the joys in life of working hard and all these other things that that most of us either take for granted or have had the fortune to really take joy out of. And he finds one of his family members, he decides, you know, he dies and he leaves his last will and testament, and everybody's sort of rubbing their hands in the room as the will is being read, and they're getting excited, and they're sort of being put in their place one person at a time. And at the very end, there's one person left in the room, and it's his great nephew. And he's saying, great, what do I get? I don't get anything. This old windbag didn't like me, that sort of stuff. And what ends up happening is on a month-to-month basis, the grandfather the great uncle who had died had left a video learning series in terms of lessons to say, here's a lesson you're going to have to do. Here's a journey I'm going to take you on. And you're going to learn all these different gifts. So one of them is a gift of friendship. One of them is a gift of hard work, a gift of learning, all these different gifts, and there are 12 of them that he ends up leaving. And by the end of this 12-month period, this boy, this great nephew, is completely transformed as a person. And I take something out of it, something new out of it, every single time I read it, depending on what's happening in my life.
Well, it sounds like it's almost a refresher course on how to be a human.
it is, and it's absolutely fantastic. And everybody I've recommended to that's read this book loved it. In fact, our CEO was so impressed by this book that he gave it to his wife. His wife read it. All three of his kids have read it, and they range anywhere from age 13 to 19. They've read the book. He actually bought hundreds of these books, and he just hands them out to people when they come here into the office. My wife loved the book so much that she read this book chapter by chapter to her fifth grade class as a teacher. She read that and did a whole section on this book and the different gifts. But so many people have read this and been affected in many different ways.
Well, you mentioned getting to know people better, and one of the reasons you liked The Ultimate Gift was that it helped you get to know yourself and others better and kind of what their value systems were. You recently did something you told me about. You took you and the rest of the people in your organization at AccuQuote took a survey, a behavioral survey, to understand yourselves and each other better to create a better working environment. I think it's called DISC, right? D-I-S-C?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. It's something here that we're using at AccuQuote. We just started using. We've seen it out there quite a bit. But what it allows you to do is it tells you a lot about your communication traits and just your behavioral traits in general. And it breaks it into four different categories, the D, the I, the S, and the C. And with that, taking the test and getting your results back is one thing. But then it's a matter of what you do with it afterwards. So we have training set up here where we go through and we learn, first of all, a little bit about what our results mean. After that, we learn how to communicate with people who are high in the different traits other than ourselves, as well as how to communicate with people that are like ourselves as well. But the real key to the DISC training is learning how to communicate better and really focus on getting the most out of everybody that you're working with.
So what I think was interesting about this DISC survey was that it measured four things: how you respond to problems and challenges, how you influence others to your point of view, how you respond to the pace of the environment, and how you respond to rules and procedures set by others. What I thought was interesting about that is when you think about this, like how do you respond to problems and challenges, you can think about, oh my God, there's some people that are always whining about that. Or how you influence others, you can think about the bullies or the people who go around behind your back. How you respond to the pace of the environment, you can think about those people that are never getting their stuff done on time. And how you respond to rules and procedures set by others, you can think about those people who break the rules all the time. And so I think it's so funny that there are who the people are who break these rules, follow these rules, how they manage these rules. And they are, what I liked about this whole DISC thing was that they really are the things that that when people do them differently than you do them, it really irks you.
Exactly. And what's interesting is it also helps you figure out if people on your team are really in the right jobs. For example, I was very happy to see that, for instance, my marketing analyst, who, you know, that's a job that has to be very analytical, where her highest trait in this was the C trait, which is really the analytical trait. So I looked at that and said, okay, she's really in the right position for her. And then most of the people that on our senior management team are high, like myself, are high in the D trait, which is, let's get it done, visionary leadership, that sort of, those sorts of traits. So it was interesting to see where there were, where you would logically think people would be, mm-hmm. and then also see some of the surprises as well.
Well, it's really neat to be able to have this level of behavioral study done in an organization. Do you know if there's anything for people who don't have a CEO who buys these kinds of packages for their organization? Is there anything good? Like I was thinking Strengths Finder 2.0, that really good book. We talk about that a lot on the show, where you could know your own strengths. It might be fun to do that with your team so that each of you understands what your strengths are. Are there other freebie things out there?
There are a lot of these different things out there.
Yeah.
I know that a couple people on my team had said at prior jobs or in school they had done the Myers-Briggs
test. Yeah, that's
and
really common.
DISC is really based on, a lot of these things are based off of Myers-Briggs.
Yeah.
In fact, I just took a different one, a different test called Personalysis.
Oh, that sounds like
that's
fun.
It's administered by our radio agency. They use that for their employees. So we went up there for a meeting and they said, hey, you know, we've used DISC for years. We'd love to see what your personalysis tells us as well. So they sent that to me and I was able to take that online. So that was really interesting as well.
I love all that stuff.
So do I. I mean, anytime I get an opportunity to gain a little bit more insight about myself or see if I can improve the way that others view me as well.
Yeah.
But also to look at other people's results and see how I can better relate with them or ways that I can improve their performance or just better collaborate.
This one's a funny one. You know, I'm a Californian, Sean, so you know that I do kooky stuff. I just did a really fun one that was kind of in this realm, but on the California version. I was at Burning Man and I went to this event where you take a journey with a shaman to find your spirit animal. And there's drumming and they wave the sage and you're in this kind of little tent area with like 20 people and you all go on this journey together. And it's really a visualization. There, you know, we're not smoking peyote or anything like that. Someone said you don't smoke peyote to me recently. I was like, I don't know. Apparently you eat peyote. I did neither, but I went on this journey, which was just a visualization in your own mind where you go down through a hole into the earth, go underground, and you kind of look around. And if animals come to you, you see what those animals are, and you ask them if they might be your spirit animal. And, you know, it's built on a lot of indigenous culture wisdom, Native American wisdom and things like that, where certain people will have an animal that represents them through their lives. Other animals can come and go in your life to help teach you things or to give you support and strength. And it was really fun because I found three animals in my journey. The first one was a coyotamundi, which is kind of like a ring-tailed lemur. They're Mexican, originally from Mexico, and they're really good at scaling cliff walls. And then I was in my little underground cave and I saw a donkey. And so he was there to support me in what I'm doing now. And then I saw a little carpenter ant. And, you know, so it's fun to learn. I learned that the ant actually means to have patience. It's an animal that helps give you patience, which I could definitely use because I'm a very impatient person. But it was fun to do that, too. I mean, I would like to do personalysis, the disc test, take a shaman journey, whatever it is. I think it's always fun to have a new lens to consider your behavior and how it affects others and how you can work to be a better person.
Absolutely. There's certain areas that even though I'm a big advocate of focusing and building your strengths, which is what a lot of these tests really help you with,
yeah.
They identify your strengths because you want to spend a lot of your time building on your strengths.
And yes.
A lot of people say, oh, you always want to, you hear this all the time growing up, you want to work on your weaknesses, work on your weaknesses.
Yeah, that's gone by the wayside.
If you end up doing that, you're never going to really develop your strength.
I agree.
Which is a waste. So while there's certain weaknesses that you want to improve on.
Sure.
You want to focus the majority of your time on building your strengths. So I know when I first got into marketing, for example, I was building my strengths. I was learning everything I could about the industry. I found the first website I built was a 3-page website, and the conversion rate was through the roof. And I was running it through affiliate programs, and all the affiliates wanted to run it because the response rate was so good, they were making a killing on it. So, you know, I was looking at that saying, okay, I have some copywriting skills, and I'd like to study as much as I can to build that up. But at the same time, I knew I was also very impatient, and others were viewing me as arrogant, pushy, and really kind of an ass sometimes. And, you know, the more I looked back at it, I said, well, yeah, I really was an ass. I didn't understand how to communicate with different styles, and I was sort of, you know, imposing my will versus collaborating and explaining why something has to be done, but still conveying it in a manner that things have to be done quickly.
Well, I think you're that person who loves to take initiative and get a million things done. And I think it's not that you're an ass. It's just that you're working on all 8 cylinders, maybe 12 cylinders. You might be the jaguar.
maybe that's your spirit animal. I'm really lucky that I'm complimented on my team by people who are very organized.
Oh, yeah.
And while I'm able to do the strategic thinking and I'm able to do the development of plans, that I have people who I can rely on to execute.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, I have so many balls all going at the same time.
You do.
That, you see the guy who's spinning the plates and, you know, he spins one plate, he spins the others, and then by the time he's done spinning, the other one is, you know, the first one's about to fall. And if I didn't have a very solid team here at AccuQuote working on the marketing team, I would be in big trouble.
Well, you're doing a lot of fun projects. And we have to wrap up. And here's what I want you to leave everyone with. You do the sweetest date night with your wife. And I think that every guy who's listening, and probably also if you're a woman and you're listening, you can do this for your partner as well. Sean, tell us the story about how you do this fun date night with your wife.
Sure. One of the things, especially since we've had kids, where we live, we're about an hour away from our in-laws, and we really don't have a good support network within, let's say, a 5-mile radius of us of people who can watch the kids. And our kids are real young. We have our son is 3.5, and our daughter is 1.5 years. And so we realized that if we're going to have dates, which is still, you know, vitally important, you know, I still look at it, and I say I'm still dating my wife. It's so important to have those dates and have that connection versus just, you know, being 100% wrapped into the kids. And so my wife and I really enjoy sushi. We don't get to do it. We don't get to have it as often because it's pricey, and we don't really have great sushi places that are extremely close to us. We have to drive out about 30 minutes. But usually once a quarter, we'll go and there's a really good Asian market. And fortunately, our neighbor goes to this Asian market usually once every month or two. So we try to have this on a day she's going down there. And we'll order a giant platter of sushi. We just did this weekend. So we'll go out and we'll do that, and we'll get a giant platter of sushi. And we'll pick up a couple of good bottles of wine, some good pairing, like an Oregon Pinot Gris or a dry Gewurztraminer for some of the spicier sushi. And we'll pick that up, and then we'll go to somewhere like Baker Square and get a pie. And we'll have our date night at home. So, you know, I'll take out the linen cloth and put that over the table, have candles. Usually we'll sit down and play Scrabble, and we'll just, you know, for 3 or 4 hours, we'll just have a really nice night together. And that's sort of been our staple thing now that we'll do once a quarter, and it's an absolute blast, and both of us look forward to it. And it's just something that we're able to do where we can say, hey, we had a really nice date. We can drink. We don't have to worry about driving. We're already at home. Just have to stumble up the stairs. And it's just a nice thing to do, something that we really enjoy doing.
It's so funny. I must just like that story because that's exactly what Tim and I do. We love to have dinner, drink a bottle of wine, or maybe martinis. We do like our martinis. And we like to try to kick each other's ass in Scrabble. I mean, we're so competitive. And what's interesting is we're very well matched. We have totally different Scrabble strategies. But sometimes I win, sometimes he wins, and it's always a crapshoot. We never know. And so we've, you know, for the last 17 years, we've been playing Scrabble like a couple of old ladies, but we do it with our martinis.
I have to say, my wife is a little bit better at me in Scrabble.
Oh, yeah.
And we do the same thing. We've always played Scrabble. We went to the Cayman Islands for 10 days, and we took the Scrabble set down there with us. And
it's
we were
addictive.
Out there having drinks out by the pool,
yeah.
Smoking cigars late at night. And it's funny. My wife is a little bit better than me at Scrabble. And she's ultra competitive at Scrabble, and it was funny. You know, she loves to tell people this, but I'll tell you as well that when she was in labor with our son, and she was on the they'd given her the epidural already, and she's in there in the room, and she's waiting to dilate more, and she's on the epidural, totally drugged up, and she still beat me at Scrabble.
I love that you were playing Scrabble while your son was being born.
Yep.
That is great. I know we've got like 5 copies, Travel Scrabble, the whole work. So maybe we will have incited someone to drag their board out, get out the cocktail shaker and have some fun with their partner. Enjoy some sushi while they do it, because that is what life is all about. So I've had a great time talking to you today. Thanks for sharing both the wisdom of your experience in your business world, as well as the marketing work that you do, and a little bit about who you are as a person. A great person at that.
Thanks, Susan.
Yeah, it's been really fun, Sean. Thank you so much. And for all of you who have listened today, thank you for tuning into Dishy Mix. Thanks for supporting my sponsors. Thanks for being here with us. I hope we had a fun and entertaining little bit of time with you today. So I hope I'll see you next week. And I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and it's been my pleasure to be with you today. Take care.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.